Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma therapists, if you've been waiting for the right time to join Trauma Therapist Network membership, this is it. Between now and the end of 2024, you can save up to 50% off of your first month of membership when you submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Join us for live calls every week. Self-care, case consultation, networking, and training are included every month. We have 4 live calls, and we have 3 tiers of membership. If the live calls don't fit your schedule, you can join the inner circle, where you can access the library of recordings, or you can do the Listing Plus membership. All the details are at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Hope to see you in the community. Submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com today.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 465.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan. This week, as hundreds of thousands of people are displaced in California from a series of wildfires, sending a lot of care to everyone in that area and everyone affected, all the people, the animals, the land, sending metta, loving kindness your way. It's so devastating. Only a few months after the terrible climate disaster in the southeast region, where in western North Carolina, the flooding in Tennessee and throughout Appalachia and also in Georgia, it's really overwhelming and hard to take it all in. So I don't know what else to say about that. This week's guest is someone who lives in California, and I hope that she is not affected by this, but certainly anyone who, even in the state, I'm sure, even if you don't live in the affected area directly, would be feeling the loss, this horribly traumatic situation. It is beautiful to see how people are coming together. That's the only positive thing I can really say. But this week, I'm re-releasing an episode from a few years ago with someone I've learned so much from and deeply admire, Dr. Janina Fisher. This conversation is about developmental trauma and dissociation, and we touched on borderline personality disorder and fawning and our thoughts about those topics, among many other things. And when we initially recorded this, I did not release it in video format because I wasn't doing that then, but it was always the plan to come back and re-release this episode in video format sometime in the future, and that's finally happening now. So I hope you will find this informative, and thank you so much for listening. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I am overwhelmed with joy at the honor of having a very special guest. Dr. Janina Fisher is my guest today. Janina, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Right. We're on the same mission. So it's good to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel that way too. And I'm just, you know, my audience knows I've been recommending your books and your flip charts and your trainings and your webinars and anything you're doing for as long as I've had this podcast. So
many of them already know who you are, but before we really dive into our interview, will you just tell our audience, for those who aren't familiar, a little more about who you are and what you do?
Well, I'm a psychologist, retiring from practice after 41 years, but my work for probably the last 20 years has been training therapists on how to work with trauma as the field actually learns more and more about the effects of trauma and how we can resolve it. I began, sure, really by luck, in the trauma field in 1989, and the field was just beginning, but it made so much sense to me. I mean, that was a Freudian error, and it just made so much sense to me that infantile sexual fantasies did not account for why my clients were struggling. And it made so much more sense that they had suffered real overwhelming events. And so I was lucky enough to do a postdoctoral fellowship with Judith Herman, and then to spend, over 10 years at Bessel van der Kolk's Trauma Center as a supervisor. And that was the period during which we started to get all this neuroscience research about trauma and the brain, and it totally transformed how we thought about trauma and how we work with it. Except that most therapists, even to this day, get trained in the model that we knew in the 80s and 90s, which is, if you talk about it, it will resolve. And so all the things that we've learned since then have not reached the awareness of most therapists, which is terrible because therapists are out there working their hardest, doing their best, trying to help often very, very challenging clients without all the tools that the field has developed over the years.
So I couldn't agree with you more about that one.
So that's kind of my mission. That's what I meant by, you know, you and I are on the same path, because my mission has to bring the fruits of what we've learned through the science into practical strategies for working with clients in session.
Yes. And as you said, I mean, it's almost unbelievable, but I know there are reasons why that this knowledge isn't getting out there more, but it's just like, I'm glad that more and more people are becoming aware of the reality of the impact of trauma, particularly in childhood, you know, where it starts most often for most of us.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And of course, we're talking to your audience, which is an audience that is already on board with these ideas and wants to learn more.
Yeah. So one of the reasons why I admire you so much is because everything I've ever heard you say, every talk or training or everything I've read, anything I've seen that you've written, is always so compassionate and really acknowledges, you know, people's humanity and how trauma impacts us, that it's not like a defect or it's not you're broken or damaged. It's just a reaction to something that happened to you, and it can heal. And, you know, your message is so depathologizing. And that's why I feel like it's so important for therapists to learn this, because some of the ways that complex trauma can show up with clients, with anyone, is someone who needs help. It can be in behaviors that, you know, without training, the professional interacting with them just doesn't understand.
Right. Or we've been taught to pathologize those behaviors and to label them borderline.
Exactly.
Which is such a shame. It's such a shame.
I agree. And so One of the things I'd like to just give a little background on something that I heard from you this summer when you were at the Trauma Research Foundation conference, and you were talking about working in state hospitals with some patients there who had been, I guess, like chronically readmitted for mental health treatment. And because the, you know, CBT medical model approaches weren't showing effectiveness in these short stays, the state brought you in to come up with some different ways of working with these clients. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. And, you know, actually, it was even worse because the hospitals who hired me, one in Massachusetts, one in Connecticut, were state hospitals where people go when short stays aren't working, when their self-harm and suicidality is unremitting. They end up in the state hospitals, or they run out of insurance coverage, or the hospital, the short stay hospitals, refuse to admit them anymore. And so I was asked, and anyone who has had any kind of relationship with the Department of Mental Health in your state knows that if the state is willing to pay money to hire a consultant, it's really bad.
It means they're losing a lot of money somewhere, right?
Exactly, exactly. So I was hired to come up with a treatment model for clients who were diagnosed borderline, who were chronically suicidal and usually and or self-harming, and who hadn't responded to any other form of treatment. And someone had noticed many of these patients had been hospitalized for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And nobody had noticed until recently that they had histories of trauma. So they'd been in the mental health treatment world for many years without anybody making a connection between their trauma histories and their...
I guarantee their psychosocials said history of abuse in childhood, you know, all these horrible things that have happened to them. And so not seeing that they had trauma.
Right. Because even though we have 30 years of research showing that a huge percentage of clients diagnosed borderline have histories of trauma, as high as 85%, of which is a statistic unheard of. Mm-hmm. And so nobody ever seems to remember that research. It's as it didn't happen. And then another research study is undertaken and that gets the same results. And still, nobody trains therapists. Oh, borderline personality disorder is actually not a personality disorder. It's a trauma-related disorder. So very, very frustrating. But it was a unique opportunity because we had a sort of captive audience. The clients weren't going anywhere. And we had these hospital systems willing to recruit staff members who wanted to try something different. And so I developed this treatment called trauma-informed stabilization treatment. We called it that because in the state of Connecticut, where I did my second sort of pilot of this method, we realized that the bureaucracy didn't like the word dissociation, didn't like the word PARD. It was okay with trauma, but trauma-informed was better than trauma alone. So we coined a name for it based on what would appeal to the administrators. And they liked trauma-informed stabilization treatment because that sounded stabilizing.
That made them feel better. They were like, okay.
Yes, right. Exactly. And it was interesting. The clients didn't care what we called it. what they liked was that they were, for the first time, being seen as people who had suffered rather than as people who were behaving badly. And many of them, they were very cute. I remember this one woman said, "I'm not borderline anymore. I'm a trauma patient." And she was like really proud of herself because she had gotten out of that terrible category of borderline. And now she was a trauma patient and she could hold her head up a little bit.
That's so true, though. I mean, because I find it, again, I just keep using the word unbelievable, but I find it unbelievable that we therapists can say, okay, well, I'm going to explain to you very compassionately. What you have is borderline personality disorder. And this means that you're manipulative and you are self-destructive and, you know, you whatever other negative things.
Attention seeking.
Attention seeking for sure. Yeah. You just want attention. And then people are like, I'm supposed to feel better to hear this diagnosis. It's supposed to make me feel like now I understand myself. But it's saying that it's kind of like all these descriptions of myself that are viewed very negatively by anyone.
Right. I know I have a wonderful recording of an interview with a young woman who had made many suicide attempts, had been in and out of hospitals. And she says to me, you know, when I would go to the hospital and the doctors would tell me that I was manipulative and attention seeking, it just made me want to kill myself more.
Yeah.
Which does not shock us.
Exactly. It wouldn't feel that way.
Right. So the theoretical idea that I went into these hospitals with was the idea that self-destructive behavior in trauma survivors is a reflection of traumatic responses and a fragmented self which has become at war against itself. Obviously, these clients are alive because part of them wants to live. And at the same time, they have a relentlessly suicidal part that keeps leading them toward self-destruction. And my theory was that the self-destructive drive was actually a fight response. It was a trauma-related survival response that got triggered in various contexts, most of which, ironically, are usually relational. And so again, this was a hospital desperate enough to try anything. And I had a strategy, which I've used in many hospitals. I just asked the staff, how many of you are willing to try something different, even if you have some skepticism about it? And some staff, it was always interesting to see, many staff were determined to just keep on doing what they'd always done, but always 30 or 40 or 50% of the staff would raise their hands and say, I'm tired of not being able to help these clients and I'm willing to try anything. And so the treatment that I created was a treatment in which we helped the client notice the self-destructive impulses as parts, so that using the structural dissociation model developed and widely accepted in Europe, just not well known or accepted here. And to my shock and delight, the clients really got it. So I would teach them this model, which basically says, in the context of trauma, we all fragment, we split, so that the left brain part of our personalities keep on keeping on, because that's part of what happens for every trauma survivor, right? They pick themselves up. If they're kids, they go to school. They do their homework, they clean their rooms, they manage very, very difficult parents. Adults get up, go to work, take the car in for service, take care of the kids. So there's a side that of everyone that keeps on keeping on. And then there's a side, which we see in the neuroscience research on trauma, the right brain side of the personality remains poised, on guard for the next and the next and the next traumatic event. We also know from the brain science research that traumatic events are recalled more frequently in feeling memories, body memories, tactile memories, olfactory memories, visual memories, rather than as a clear, coherent narrative. So my assumption was that the right brain part of the personality held the feeling memories of the trauma, but also the survival responses. And so, which are fight, flight, freeze, like a deer in the headlights, submit, and cry for help. And that it wasn't hard to identify the parts because we only have five survival defenses. So any behavior has to reflect one of those or a combination, like fight and flight, which you see when people explode in anger and then walk out, or attach, cry for help, and submit can go together, where the submitting is in the service of maintaining the relationship at all costs. So it was not hard for these clients to start to see the parts. I would spend 15 minutes with my psychoeducational flip chart explaining the model to these clients who had never met me before in their lives. I just walked into a hospital interview room and said hello and then showed them my flip chart. And it was amazing how quickly and easily they saw themselves in this model. It's been overwhelming. In fact, since the publication of my book, Healing the Fragmented Selves of Trauma Survivors. Oh, Murray holding it up. Thank you, Laura. I get emails every week, sometimes several in a day, from trauma survivors all over the world saying, I just read your book and I want to thank you because it taught me how to understand myself. I've never understood why I couldn't get help, why I frustrated my therapist, why I drove my loved ones crazy. All I could think was that I was, a mentally ill person. And then I read your book and I understood myself. It's so, so gratifying to know that people can depathologize themselves.
Absolutely.
You said it's like not only therapists who can depathologize clients, but clients can depathologize themselves if they have the information.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause, and while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms like irritability, moodiness, discomfort, or uncontrollable cravings, menopause symptoms such as hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep, feeling tired all the time. Hormone Harmony can help with all of these things and more. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today. Today's episode is sponsored by Psychotherapy Networker and PESI. If you're a therapist, be sure to check out the partner page, which is linked in the show notes, where you can get discounted trainings with previous Therapy Chat guests like Courtney Armstrong, Dr. Leslie Korn, Dr. Ariel Schwartz, Dr. Tammy Nelson, Dr. Janina Fisher, Rebecca Case, Dr. Peter Levine, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Deb Dana, Lori Gottlieb, and many, many others. You'll find the link in the show notes to my partner page with PESI and Psychotherapy Networker, where you can find all these discounted trainings. If you need CEs, this is a great place to go. Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months.
That's so true. And, you know, when we talk about structural dissociation, when I talk about that with therapists that I work with, often it sounds complex. And, you know, when you show it and you have a diagram in your book as well as your flip chart, it makes it more concrete. But every time I've ever used that with a client, showing it to them, they get it. They just get it immediately, just like you were saying. So we have this idea that someone who's been in a state mental hospital for 2 to 5 years, seen as, you know, almost, you know, the state is like, well, let's try anything, you know, last resort, let's get an expert in here. Hey, but that would be too complicated, too complex for a client like that to understand, or a patient. And clearly, people know themselves. They just need the information.
And also, that was something Judith Herman taught me, because she believed that it was very important that victims get educated so that they were not coming for help with the therapist in this lofty position above them, knowing about trauma while the client had no self-esteem, no sense of having any strengths, and didn't understand what had happened. So she taught us to educate clients about trauma just as a natural part of therapy. And of course, as the years went on, we had more and more information to share, which made it even more valuable.
Absolutely. Yes, I love her perspective too. The dignity of each person just really comes through in her writing and her way of being. Right. She's at the TRF also.
That's right. That's right. She was at the conference too. Yeah. Yeah. So what I've really appreciated about this model is that it's also an attachment model. Because I had this epiphany. Oh, goodness. I can't even remember how many years ago, over 10 years. And it was what led me to write the Fragmented Selves book. I had this epiphany thinking about a question that had been posed by a supervisee. She asked, what is healing? Like, how do we know when somebody's healed? And I thought, oh my gosh, we talk about healing, but have we ever defined it? And so I began to think, right? What do we mean when we talk about trauma healing? And I thought, well, it's definitely not what people feel after they've processed their memories. Even with EMDR, people feel relieved, they feel exhausted, they feel like they made it through something, but they don't feel healed. Mm-hmm. And so I began to think, okay, what's the moment that people feel healed? And then it just came to me. It's the moment that they deeply accept themselves. They forgive themselves. They, for the first time, feel warmly and lovingly toward themselves. We could call it self-compassion, but it's that moment that they go from fear and self-attack to acceptance and compassion. And then I began to think, okay, how do we help people get there? And then it made sense to me. It's easier to get there if we try to attach to our parts, because our whole selves are complicated. Everybody has qualities in themselves they don't like, as well as other qualities. So it can be hard to accept one's own self 100% unconditionally, but it's easy to accept and welcome and be warmly disposed toward a young child part or an angry teenager. And so that was really the other component, not only helping people to see, oh, it's not me that wants to die. It's this part of me that wants to save me by killing me. And then for them to take the second step, which is to say, can I make a relationship with this part that wants to kill me? Can I make a relationship with the child whose sadness is overwhelming? And how can I welcome all of these parts to the table? Because if I don't welcome them to the table, they're going to be in a struggle and conflict.
They're going to be running around under the table, making it jostle all around and knocking the leg out.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it. I love it. I'm just seeing little parts running around over the table. Fantastic. I love it. So that's really the premise of trauma-informed stabilization treatment, called TIST, because every trauma treatment has to have initials.
Yeah. Without an acronym, does it even exist?
I know. And we've just had our first certification training in the approach. Mm-hmm. We've graduated 100 certified therapists, which is really exciting. And already, I know I get a lot of requests for, do you know someone in this state or this country that can work the way you describe in your book? And my list or my directory now gives me those resources to offer to clients, which is fantastic.
That is so beautiful. That's it. You're spreading it. Those 100 therapists, they work with thousands of people. More people get trained. That's the movement.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Because everyone that we reach or teach has an impact on hundreds of people. And it's also so nice for trauma survivors to feel a whole community behind them. Mm-hmm. Because if there's a community of therapists, as there is for the podcast, that means there's a community that's on their side. Mm-hmm. It thinks that what they've been through is significant, that their needs are legitimate.
Yeah. That's important. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. And in these state hospitals, I didn't deliver the treatment. I was the consultant. I would meet with the clients for a half hour a month and I would train the staff to work with them. But what the factor we hadn't even built into the model was that my presence as a member of the team had enormous power for these clients. It was like, wow, this person that we think is important thinks that we're important enough to work with our team and to support our healing. And so it was great. Sometimes the clients would ask their therapists, could you ask Dr. Fisher, you know, such and such? Could you ask Dr. Fisher why I hear voices? And of course, just the fact that the therapist could ask me, and then, you know, the therapist could have answered that question a million times, but it felt there were certain questions that they needed somebody they perceived as having a smarter brain to answer.
Well, and you're like an attachment object there already. Like they're saying, this person cares about me. So their role here is a crucial piece.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's great. I love it. I'm kind of the matriarch of the family.
Have you heard that expression? I think that the millennial generation and Generation Z are brilliant at coming up with little catchphrases to describe things. And one thing that I've been hearing is your therapist's therapist is your grand therapist. So you could be the grand therapist for the therapists that were in the hospital.
I love it. Oh my God. If I live long enough, I'll be the great grand therapist.
Please do.
Oh, that's great. I love it. Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you something. I think it's almost like the elephant in the room question in a way, because I think it's common for therapists to understand that people have trauma histories and they understand that trauma is real. They know it's a thing and they may have some training in how to work with trauma, but they don't always recognize their clients as having, you know, they'll say, well, I've already ruled out trauma. And it's like, well, how did you rule it out? And they'll say, I asked the client if they had any trauma and they said no, you know?
Right. Which is, I think, one of the problems with our sort of narrative memory way of thinking. Like we only believe the history the client has told us. And so now, obviously, we don't want to put words in any client's mouth. But it's so common for people to have been traumatized and not know it, you know, particularly when the trauma is unusual, like medical trauma, like accidents, the death of a parent in childhood.
Yeah.
It's just traumatic, and many people don't realize that. Being a witness to domestic violence, even if the victim, right? There's so many types of trauma.
And things that were pre-verbal memory.
Absolutely. And we know from the attachment research that having parents who are frightening or appear frightened has a traumatic effect on children. So one of the things that I've learned to do is I don't ask people, were you traumatized or abused? I ask them, when you were growing up, were either of your parents ever frightening? And that gets a lot more yes responses. And then I ask them, and when you were growing up, did either of your parents appear frightened? And I can remember, I'm just remembering a client right now who said no when I said, were either of your parents ever frightening? But when I said, were either of your parents ever frightened? She said, oh my gosh, my mother was the most frightened person I've ever known. And then it turned out. And so that I could say, okay, so when you have a parent who appears frightened and you're a little kid, that's scary. It later turned out what the client had neglected to mention because she minimized it all through her childhood into her adult years was that her mother was also frightening. If the mother wasn't frightened, she was enraged and scary in her anger. So usually if I ask the frightened and frightening question, I get fewer of those no's. And, you know, we also know now, which isn't really in our client interview repertoire, we also know that about intergenerational trauma, right? We know that if you're a child of an untreated trauma survivor, you have a statistical likelihood of having PTSD. So we got to remember to ask that question too. Did either of your parents have frightening parents? Did either of your parents ever experience any losses? I'm thinking of many, many clients whose parents died when they were very young. So the parent generation had traumatic losses at an early age. And so that trauma kept getting passed down.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, when I think about it, when you think about just the context of history, even just in the 20th century, my parents, who are in their 80s, were raised during World War II. And they grew up during war, even if it wasn't on U.S. soil, it affected everyone who was living at that time, including certainly their parents.
Oh, absolutely.
And then if their parents were like World War I vets, or one of them was, you know, then that's another layer. And not to mention the Depression and the, you know, assassination of presidents and Martin Luther King.
And all the immigrants who make up the, you know, the bulk of Americans. You know, I'm thinking about the Irish coming from the potato famine in Ireland. So they were coming from a very traumatic situation to the U.S. So there's so much more intergenerational trauma. Actually, I just had a client just the other day who said to me, bless her heart, I was really delighted. She said, you know, besides my family, you know, I had another trauma too. I'm Jewish, right? She's absolutely right. Yeah. Because she carries the multi-generational legacy of the persecution of Jews, which well precedes the Holocaust, goes back
thousands of years.
Thousands of years. So we have to look forward to the generation of children who've been impacted by COVID.
Yes. I just saw a headline that said that, did you see this? I think it was either in the New York Times or Washington Post, but it said something like 80 million children in America lost a parent or caregiver during COVID.
Wow.
Yeah.
That makes sense. If 100 million people have died, many of them were caregivers. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, you know, again, we're living this now, but it's impacting us now, but it's impacting developing bodies and brains even more significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we've all been doing the equivalent of hiding in bomb shelters, mm-hmm. trying not to get COVID.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when you think about parents being frightened.
Yeah. There's a lot of work for us to do.
Yeah. Well, I wish we could talk more. I wish we could talk for hours, but I know that you are a very busy person and certainly we can't do that. But I'm excited about the fact that your TIST training is really pretty accessible because it's available online.
Right. So that's something I really wanted, because I realized that I couldn't travel enough to give trainings in New York or the DC metro area or Chicago. I had to have a way to reach people virtually. And luckily, I was able to partner with the Academy of Therapy Wisdom to create an online training. So it's very exciting that we're starting our second round of our certification training coming up in a couple of months.
Yes, that is so exciting, and I'm planning on joining that. But
lovely to have you.
So, Janina, can you tell everyone who's listening where they can find everything you're doing, your books, your flip charts, your trainings? Where do they find all that stuff?
The best place, so thank you for reminding me, because I have to update my website, is to go to my website, JaninaFisher.com. Another good way is just to Google my name, you know, Janina Fisher, upcoming trainings, and I will try to get my assistant to update the list of trainings on my website. But the TIS training information should be there. And you know, information, I think there's a way on my website to add your name to my mailing list, which I don't abuse, just so everybody knows. I actually have a pet peeve about those programs that incessantly email us, apparently every day, it seems like.
I know, sometimes three times a day.
So I try to be very thoughtful about just mailing a few times a year when there's something that I'm doing or one of my colleagues is doing that I think will interest people.
Well, I know that everything you put out into the world is thoughtful and high quality. So, and I'll be sharing the link to the TIS training that's coming up soonest for people to sign up to. So I'll put that and your website in the show notes. And I just want to say one more time, thank you so much for sharing a little sliver of your wisdom and knowledge with us today on Therapy Chat. It's been such a pleasure talking with you.
It has been such a pleasure, Laura. And thanks to you and your audience. Take good care and keep doing the good work that you all do.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com.
Trauma therapists, if you've been waiting for the right time to join Trauma Therapist Network membership, this is it. Between now and the end of 2024, you can save up to 50% off of your first month of membership when you submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Join us for live calls every week. Self-care, case consultation, networking, and training are included every month. We have 4 live calls, and we have 3 tiers of membership. If the live calls don't fit your schedule, you can join the Inner Circle, where you can access the library of recordings, or you can do the Listing Plus membership. All the details are at traumatherapistnetwork.com. Hope to see you in the community. Submit your application at traumatherapistnetwork.com today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.